Hi, guys. We want to thank our great sponsor, Legion M. They are the first fan-owned entertainment company. We love working with them. They create really incredible experiences for people. If you're someone who wants to feel like you own a piece and are a piece of the industry, it's a great way to do it. They do meetups all over the country. They have a really cool community going online. I cannot recommend them enough. Go to legionm.com for more information.
Hi, I'm Leonard Maltin.
And I'm Jesse Maltin.
And you're listening to Maltin on Movies. And our guest today is the lovely Helen Slater. Yes, the same Helen Slater who, astonishingly, how can it be 35 years ago that you were Supergirl? How is that possible?
It's crazy. I know.
Because
I
you
know.
Still look super to me.
Oh, mm-hmm. Isn't that nice? That...
No, but I'm just telling the truth.
That's why you've been married so many years, right? You know to say. Thank you. Thank you. That's so sweet.
And well. We're going to get the whole backstory because
sure.
We're going to grill you
sure.
about all of this. But that was your first movie.
Yes.
And it became, I guess, your signature is the best way to put it. But who could have envisioned, certainly not you or anybody else, that you'd be still involved with Supergirl all these years later in its newest incarnation?
Yeah, it's to be playing her mother now. Mm-hmm. I play Supergirl's mom on the CBS, or now CW show. No, mm-hmm.
It's been CW switching now.
It's CW.
I think it's still CW.
Yes.
But a station with letters, we'll just go
and
with.
And not only that, I mean, it is sort of it's just the oddest job to have had to have played that role, because then on Smallville, which was also about the Superman, as a teenager, I played his biological mom from Krypton. And then there's another one, too. Oh, the animated series.
Yes.
I play Martha Kent. So I think they just
You've
have a good
all.
Time. They just enjoy. It's not only me. I think it's all of us that have been in this DC universe get asked again and again.
And what a lovely thing.
I mean, oh, my gosh. It's so sweet.
It's
so
great
nice.
For you guys. We get to do it, and it's great for the fans.
Well, I just was at a Comic-Con in England.
Oh, my.
And, I can tell you, the fans, the people that are real DC World fans, they just love those connections and being able to, tell you.
They do a really good – we were talking about this last night because I was telling – my dad doesn't get to watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
And I was saying that this is something that's so common where they bring people in, and it really makes it – multi-generational in a whole other way.
Yeah.
So it's not just someone may not know you were Supergirl, but now you're Supergirl's mom.
Yes, and in fact, at the Comic-Cons, a lot of times it's the parents.
That's it.
And the kids will have seen the TV show.
Yep.
But they always, at the Comic-Cons, they'll print up some picture
of you
as Supergirl. And sometimes the kids are just staring at it like, it doesn't quite make sense. Melissa Benoist is Supergirl. Who's that person? And the dad is saying, oh, that was Supergirl when I was here. Anyway,
well, and she's very... you two are quite similar.
She has very similar
qualities.
I want to say that's the highest compliment. Melissa Benoist is one of the kindest, hardest working, 1 hour television. I've been on a few shows also as a series regular where the hours are just so unforgiving. It's very rarely a 10-hour day, 12-hour day, and with special effects Supergirl, it's the CGI, it's going on many times, 14-hour, 15-hour days, and she has never lost her seat. I mean, just kept the, she'll say if something feels tiring or whatever, but no, just no drama behavior. Mm-hmm. I can't say enough great things about her. They're so lucky to have found her really.
And young women are very lucky because she's exactly what you want them to emulate as a real person.
Yes.
Because you only hear nice things and then in the role.
Yeah, definitely.
But it is the generational. It's what makes me happy and makes me excited. It's part of what I love about Family Guy. And because Seth MacFarlane is such a... He's a jazz nut, he's a musical theater guy.
Oh, wow.
He loves film.
I didn't know that.
So the same thing, the jokes that the jokes that they will make on that show, American Dad too, you know, Pearl Bailey is the name of the high school. Like, yeah. It's stuff that I realize there are four of us getting it and right. loving every minute, and the rest, nobody has a clue.
Yeah,
fine
that's
with me.
Great. That's
fine
great.
By me.
That's great.
Here's
bring
a silly
in.
Question. Is there a difference in the vibe, the atmosphere, the interactions at a British Comic-Con than there is to
more tea,
great
lots more tea.
Well, the accent is so lovely. It softens anything, including sometimes people coming up and saying, you know, I had a woman in this last Comic-Con. I mean, it was just so odd. And she said to me something like, you know, you looked very ill at the Comic-Con from 2 years ago. You just looked very sick. And I smile politely, you know, and you just, but she's saying it with the loveliest accent. So you feel like it's, you're kind of getting, I'm trying to think what the difference, if I can think of what the American Comic-Cons have done. I'm going to Metropolis this weekend,
which
I haven't been in quite a while, like 10 years. I think it's this tiny little one, and it's the birthplace of Superman. It's Metropolis, Illinois, mm-hmm. and I'll have a better sense of the American ones from that, how the fans are. But usually everybody is so kind, and many times what they're telling you is not necessarily, oh, I loved you in the movie, but they're telling you stories like, you know, my dad passed away last year, mm-hmm. and I have this memory when I was 12, you know, sitting on the couch and that movie coming on, and it really becomes more about that. And in that way, it's sort of this unexpected thing where you're hearing people's very moving stories, including people that have been through, you know, just unbelievable tragedy and illness, and really willing to share their stories. So I always feel moved by that piece of it.
Well, that is where we do still need each other. Mm-hmm. And where the interweb and everything else you can't really replace is that.
Yeah.
And having someone come up and do exactly that, which is, you know, this was my, and whenever I was sick and I was home from school, I watched this movie with my mom.
It's like the, and you know? I think you're speaking to something true, which is just the human, that human contact or being connected, even just for a few minutes with, you know, being able to be seen.
Yeah.
As crazy as the various cons are, and they are crazy.
Have you been then? Have you been in that world?
We've been to so many.
So
yes.
So you know.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh, yes. San Diego Comic-Con.
That's
I think
right.
that's where we saw you. Yes.
We do Comic-Con, and we've been to WonderCon.
Isn't it
incredible?
I mean, San Diego's, that's insane. I've only done that once, and I don't think I can do that again. That was just like, I mean, that must have been 200,000
people. I have to tell you,
everybody
we meet or have any conversation with have been really nice.
Yes.
Really, really nice.
There's just a lot of human beings.
There's just so many of them.
Yes. I mean, it really makes you think the mass of humanity.
Yes.
It's like the masses.
Yeah.
But what, did you finish what you were saying? I'm sorry. I don't know if I cut you off.
No. It's that, though. It's that the thing that makes me really excited for the cons is that whether it's D23 or anything else, people plan for them for a whole year or 2 years.
Yeah.
They find out who's going to come, and they will sit for hours to whether it's Hall H or it's just getting into whatever the city is. Because I have a lot of friends who go to the cons around the world.
Yeah.
And across the internet, there's so many of them.
Exactly.
And especially voice actors, there's a lot of them where this is their life.
Yeah.
And they go from this to this. Jason Marsden is.
Oh, yeah.
Everywhere. There's, you know, there's so many.
And now the artists also. Because that's been a huge boom, I think, in the last more than when I did my first one. I haven't done that many, but it now seems like there's this great financial way to make some money during, you know, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, really great.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to begin this exactly, but when you attended the High School for Performing Arts in New York City, did you actually do production numbers out on the street?
Okay.
Just like in Fame? Tell me it was just
Here's
like it was
Here's the wild
in
thing,
Fame.
And I'm not saying it because it's my alma mater and I love it so much. My class, which Erica Gimple, she played Coco in Fame, she was in my class, Lisa Vidal, who's a working actress, Keisha Lewis, who took over for Jennifer Holliday in Dreamgirls, they were all part of my class, and we were part of the bus and truck, this very like a special, you had to audition in the 11th grade, and it was an original musical that I composed, actually.
Oh, my.
And then we would take it on tour in the city to public schools in Harlem and Spanish Harlem and all over the city. And we were the kind of kids, like our class, were the very singy, probably annoying to the musicians or to some track. But we really did like have this kind of innocent, buoyant, it
but
wasn't that far off from the fame thing.
Well,
is what I'm
but that's
trying
great.
To say.
That's just great. That's,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, for us, we were... We just were so, I mean, when you think now, I'm 55 years old now, and I look back at that 15-year-old and that sense of just joy and youth, and when you just feel like you can absolutely do anything, and just how precious that time is, and seeing it in my daughter and my nieces and my friends' kids, that kind of, you know, just facing forward and your life in front of you and what's going to happen, mm-hmm. and really lovely.
Did your daughter inherit the showbiz bug from you?
She went to NYU Tisch, and
oh
she was in the Stella Adler School, and then she transferred to the film school and made a web series, and kind
so,
of now
so, she's like you and your husband.
She's definitely, she has a lot more Rob, because they have more of that humor from like The Office, and they both, we've all done improv, but she's really done that improv track, and now, if you could see my face, anyone that's listening... Leonard and Jesse can see it. She's now living in Brooklyn, which is fabulous for her, mm-hmm. with her great cabal of women writers, and they're part of this Brooklyn collective. It's like an improv collective, mm-hmm. and they get up and do their art and their work and their... But, you know, it's super far away, and we miss mm-hmm. her. But she's happy, and, yeah, she had a couple of, like, maybe opportunities to come back to L.A., and she was like, you know, I'm really, really happy here, and...
Well,
Brooklyn,
good
which I'm from New York, so it should be.
Yeah.
Although I was living on New York on the Upper East Side, and she's in Brooklyn, so it may as well be Moscow.
Yeah,
it's just,
yeah.
It's so far
yes.
from yeah. But anyway, my mom's there, so she gets
oh,
to see her.
Oh, that's good.
That's,
nice. That's something.
Yeah. Now, were your parents artistic at all?
My parents, they divorced when I was 8 years old, and my dad worked in public television. He was the general manager and the vice president for PBS and mm-hmm. WETA 26. And then my mom was a, she went to law school when I was a senior and practiced law. And then just did all piecework for the last... I have the best story about her. Can I share it?
Yes.
It's just too, and you can always cut it out if it's too long.
No.
So she's this really feisty Jewish mother, like super overbearing, brilliant, like went to college at 15 and just this really intense energy. And she and I have always bumped heads our whole life, but not out of no love, just... whatever the mother-daughter mm-hmm. gestalt is, which all mother-daughters have to go through. So a few years ago, I said to her, it was just so becoming like a little too stressful. And I said, look, when I come, I'm going to stay in a hotel. We'll still go to the theater. We'll still go to meals. We'll still see Hannah, my daughter. But I just think it's just being, and she was, you know, as you can imagine, very upset about this. But we did it. It just was what had to happen. And around 3 years into this, I was doing a little movie in New York, and I had a few days off, and I called her, and I was like, Mom, why don't I come stay with you? And she was like, oh my God, this is so wonderful. Yes, come stay with me. And we had the best time ever. We walked through Central Park, a 6-mile walk. We stayed up till 3 a.m. talking about philosophy and religion and literature and just the best time. And on the third day, and I should just backtrack a little bit. So her work in the peace movement has been specifically around nuclear disarmament, and mm-hmm. she's traveled all over the world. You can look her up, Alice Slater, written articles in the New York Times.
You have an Alice too?
We have an Alice too, your
Alice
mother,
too.
Your husband. Yeah. Anyway, so on the third day, the phone rings at 5 a.m, and I come out, and I have never really seen my mother cry, just not seen her mm-hmm. really cry. And she's with stream water down her face. And I'm like, Mom, what's happening? What's going on? Is everything okay? And she puts the phone down and she says, we've won the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, what were the chances, one of her organizations, ICANN, that I would be in the house on the morning that she got this news? I took her to Oslo. She was in the ceremony. I had to go with all the family members watching on the video. And it was just one of the most incredible, not making up, but like just an extraordinary story in my life that wow. happened. Yeah. And the reason ICANN won it, and that's International Coalition Against Nuclear,
sure.
I always
sounds
get
right.
it wrong, something like that.
Yep.
Is because for in 2017, or 2017 or 2018, I think it was 2018, they did this initiative at the United Nations to get as many countries as possible to sign a petition that would say nuclear weapons are unlawful.
Mm.
And because of that one thing that they were able to get done, they were awarded the Nobel Peace Prize.
Incredible.
And, you know, it was an incredible experience.
And you got to share that with her.
And
that's
share it with her.
Deal.
And then I was in the apartment where, after I had said, I'm not staying. We're taking a break for a few. It's just too much. Anyway, so.
But the break was healthy. Maybe
that's, oh, my gosh,
you know,
yes. Sometimes, you know, that thing of you just sometimes have to do that.
Yes.
So there you are in your senior year.
Yes.
At the High School for Performing Arts. And how does the audition for Supergirl come about?
So I graduated in June. And then I said to both my parents, I said, you know, I'd like to take some time to see if I can audition and get something. Because the rule was at Performing Arts, in general, you weren't allowed to work. Sometimes there were exceptions, but they really were very strong, like, come and get this training. And it was a vocational high school. It was very strict in how...
Oh, I remember reading that they actually forbid you.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty strong. And
jobs,
there were
a
couple of exceptions, but for the most part, it really was, that was the letter of the law. So I said, I'd like to try this. And so I started in July auditioning for things. And I think I auditioned for Supergirl first in September, like beginning of September after I'd graduated. You know, it was just a shock. I had two agents at the time. One of them wanted to send me up for Supergirl, and the other wanted to send me up for Supergirl's friend. So I went with the agent that was like, go for the part of Supergirl. Yeah.
That's too funny.
And can you walk us through that? I'm sorry, you probably had to tell this so many times.
No, that's okay. Well, my mom, bringing my mom back in, Alice, she sewed me a cape. I definitely went in fully propped up. She sewed the cape.
Wow.
I remember walking in with the other girls, seeing the other girls there.
How do you do it with a straight face, though? How do you walk into a room with a cape on?
Because at Performing Arts High School, you know, this was dead serious for me. But I remember seeing the other young women there, and no one had a cape or a skirt.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, maybe this is the distinguishing piece. The nerves, my heart, like, bang, 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 just pounding, just the nerves of it, of that audition, I remember very specifically. And I remember one acting teacher saying the obstacle strengthens the will. So I was like, you know, strengthening the will against that fear. And then I auditioned, and then they brought me back for a screen test in England. And there is a documentary, The Making of Supergirl. I think it's on the DVD now. And Lynn Stallmaster, who's a revered casting director.
Great casting director.
Yes, and he talks about his strategy for getting them to cast me after that first audition was to bring me, when they brought me back for the second one before the screen test, he said his thinking was like, bring her in first.
Hmm.
So that he thought that would be like... I don't know, somehow that was his strategy, as opposed to bring her in last after everybody. And then it was just this wild change of life experience. I trained with Alf Joint, who trained Christopher Reeve and gained 25 pounds and did all this weight training and trampolining.
Muscle?
I mean, it was
sure.
like boost, sure. Drinking protein drinks and running and weight training, fencing, horseback riding. He just had me do as many athletic, swimming 3 times a week, everything to sort of build up a sense of being an athlete, like being an athlete. And then learning how to fly on the wires, which was quite a trip. And I heard it actually hasn't changed that much now with Melissa, the way they do it. It isn't that much different. They still have like the diaper harness with the piano wires and the, it has been
Just watching a video of my friend who had to do a fall.
So it's
like
similar.
This morning was watching and laughing because you do think all the technology in the world, all the things we have, and he's still awkwardly bent in half going,
you know, it's funny, my
arms.
Friend Helen Hunt has said, and she and I joke about this because she directed a couple of years ago this movie Ride about a surfing movie, Mother Surfer, and she said it's 6,000 years we've been in the film business and the sound department has not improved. Nothing has improved with sound. You're still getting wired with them putting it up your tights and your private parts, and they haven't it's the only thing that and Supergirl flying has just stayed improved.
And is it true that you got to actually talk to Christopher Reeve about
I did. He was at Pinewood Studios. Originally, he was going to be in the script, and then I think just the way that the schedules are working out, he couldn't do it then. But we did become friends, and I have told this story before of when he and I were in New York, and we were out late one night, and we had gone to dinner, and we were sitting on Central Park South or Central Park West on a park bench, and it was late, like maybe 1 a.m. And 2 or 3 fire trucks come zooming down Central Park West, let's just say. And Chris turned to me and he said, "Oh, here's Superman and Supergirl, and not a thing we can do to help." So he was a lovely, lovely man. I don't know if you ever got to meet him.
I did just briefly.
Yeah, I mean, just so kind-hearted. And interestingly, this Comic-Con I was at in England, Brandon Routh was He is... really has a crisp vibe, like just this gentle heart and kind of warmth and just such a sweetness. And we talked about it briefly, and he said, "You know, I've been told that before," and really wild. Anyway,
it's one hell of a compliment.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
if you're going to be compared, that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you remember your first day on the soundstage?
Oh, that's such a good question. What was the first day? I don't know that I remember the first day. I remember the first day of flying. And I remember that they were starting to pull me up on the wires. And I remember quietly singing to myself, "Hello, Dolly."
Why not?
Why that song? I guess it was all those summer stock, summer camp, summers. And I remember I had sung that when I was little, learning how to water ski, like trying to get up on the water skis. So I was singing like, "Hello, Dolly," as they were lifting me. And you know, you're not... It's not just 2 feet. It's many feet
up
in the air. And again, just that feeling like you're just, I don't know what the implications of this, but you're giving the impression that you're okay.
Including to yourself.
And to yourself. And this sense of you're okay. Well, and I trusted the people that I was working with, Alf Joint, and the people that were...
That is another funny motion of things that haven't changed. Just flying is still the arms out.
Yes.
So, you know, all the
Supergirl
years.
It was like one arm down, one arm up. And Chris had a thing with because he was a pilot about some sort
directional.
Yes. It was like he was an airplane or some.
Oh, I love it. Hey, you know what? You're Superman. You do whatever you want.
Yeah. Right.
You want to be a plane, you be a plane.
Exactly.
That's fine.
Exactly.
And how would you sum up the experience of making that movie? Was it a positive experience?
Very much so.
It sounds like it's terrible.
It was a great experience. I mean, it completely changed the trajectory of my life. So for that alone, I feel like it just holds such a place in my psyche. And the fact that it's still going on, that's sort of just an odd. I mean, imagine seeing a picture of yourself at 18 years old when you go to Comic-Cons or some.
Yeah.
You're kind of, it's very present. I wished it had done better, obviously, and that the writing, I mean, I don't know if part of it was that it was a Supergirl and they couldn't fashion it exactly in the same way as a Superman. I don't know why not. But then, you know, I went on and did Ruthless People and Secret of My Success and movies that really broke out, I think, a little better than what Chris was up against. I think for him it was much a much harder
No, thing. You didn't get straitjacketed, no pun intended,
right?
in that part.
Right.
Career-wise.
Yeah, that was sort of maybe the silver lining of it not doing as well.
Huh, interesting. Yeah. Well, your next film made a big, big impact on my daughter here.
Mm-hmm. The Legend of Billie Jean.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's one of the very first movies that I saw where I started to understand the whole girl power situation, which is why I think it has the effect that it does.
Yeah, I love hearing that, and I've had so many people share that with me.
Well, it was on TV a lot, which is also a factor.
Yes.
You know, something's on a ton, you know, and
it sinks in what the message is they were saying.
Well, I looked at reviews, and it wasn't a super well-reviewed film, but I said to my dad, I have no clue if I watched it now. I think I'd still love it.
Yeah.
Just because that's
what
movies are.
Well, it holds that place. We have that place.
For me, that's that movie. I didn't realize as well until much later that was Christian Slater because that's not what stuck in my head.
Yeah. And Yardley Smith, who plays the voice of Lisa on The Simpsons.
I remembered because she gets her period in the film.
Right.
Which is a little Cutter. Kid. Again, you're going, what does that mean?
Really?
This thing with the ladies and she's super embarrassed about it. And then when I got older and I went,
this is
terrible. I get it now. Okay. But again, in terms of things not changing, what's the first thing in the film that shows your act of power and you don't own me is cutting the hair?
Yes.
So again, some things don't change.
And I had people tell me they cut their hair also, that film, they had their first.
The whole look.
Yeah.
Your whole look. You go from being just standard beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, where it's like, oh, I get it. I get why people react the way they do. And then you're in a biker type.
Right.
You know, and with the blue and the pink and the hair and the earrings and everything, it stuck. It did. It was there. And I do. I still think about it. That's why meeting you the other day for the first time, I just went,
By the way, we had the best time at the...
Thanks.
Do we call it the Malton Film Fest?
It's Malton Fest.
Oh, my gosh.
That's what it is.
Anybody that's listening that lives in Los Angeles, or if you live anywhere in the world or country, just make it a destination.
Thank
it was
you.
So much fun. We saw Songcatcher.
One of my favorite movies ever.
And, you know, it was just so beautiful. And I think we did see it when it originally came out.
Sure.
I went with Rob, but I didn't remember so much of it. And we were both just crying and just heart opened. And that story is just so beautiful.
It's a beautiful movie.
Having heard what you do, which we will get into in a minute.
Yes.
But it makes that much more sense. That's a perfect movie for you to see.
Just so
well, the
pretty.
Whole point of that festival, which we will be doing again.
Yes.
The whole point of that festival was to show movies that cried out to find an audience.
We
to
need
find an
that.
Audience again. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we need that. And also just that the family affair that your wife was making. Is it true that Alice,
oh,
was
Jesus.
She making the...
That woman with the mimosas, let me tell you. I was just waiting for a cop to come up. I really was. I was waiting for an officer to come up and just go, listen, lady, you cannot just be poor. She had champagne. She's pouring. She made
mimosas.
It was Mother's Day. It was
which
Sunday
makes
Mother's
sense.
Day.
Which makes sense.
So Alice was pouring
mimosas.
Mimosas. That was so fun.
Alice was out there just getting everybody tanked.
Yeah, that's
and
the way to go.
It was very funny.
And all the volunteers were so lovely.
They're all our friends.
Yes,
thing. We abused everyone we know.
But that's
it
what you should
all
do.
All friends.
We're
there.
So glad you were there.
Yeah, and we'll come every year. It was
great.
Just terrific. Was that the first year?
That was our very first.
Oh my God.
Our maiden voyage.
Yeah, it's gonna be. I think it's going to just keep getting bigger and bigger. And
thank you.
Thank you.
The goal is to have exactly what you had, which is you see something and you think, oh my God, this movie.
Yeah.
How did I not see it? I'm so glad I did. And I said to friends, you may not love all the movies.
Yeah.
No, you can't. That's
you
not
can't.
How things
you,
work.
Exactly.
But at the very least, you won't feel like you won't feel like you wasted any time. It will still feel valuable in
no,
some way.
No, and the boon of being at the Egyptian.
Yeah.
That beautiful. Oh, my
all
gosh.
Of it. All yeah. of it was wonderful. And that's why having you there was such a trip.
Oh, yeah.
But,
oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, it really was. And then, so you have to tell the story, though, of how you initially met them.
Well. Some years ago, and I mean some years ago.
Yeah, I think 25 maybe.
It's got to be something.
I don't know
like
if you
that.
Play this game, but whenever we think it's 5, it's 10, and
yeah.
if it's 10, it's
oh,
20.
Oh no! Oh god!
Yeah, it's a very
sure
depressing
that's true.
Game. Yeah.
Some time back, your husband Rob Watsky
yes
sent me a copy of a short subject that you had done with your, is it a theater troupe that you
were all part of? Yes, the Boubelaires. We were doing improv and all in gibberish, by the way. Our improv in L.A., we would do these shows and so.
And you sent me a very cute, funny, whimsical short subject called Heaven's a Poppin'.
Yes.
A takeoff on the old Olson and Johnson show and movie Hell's a Poppin'. And I really liked it. And I think in those pre-email days, I wrote back an actual letter how much I enjoyed it.
He took out his quill.
Can I tell you what it meant to him, too? It was just such a huge, thing in his life, compliment to have you be saying that. And I think I know he did. He put your quote on the DVD just as a, because when you're independent and you're making your things, you know, it's hard to get any kind of acknowledgement from the real world or from the established world. So that was so kind and...
Well, it was because the film was charming.
Yeah. Really, he's a terrible person. He wouldn't
just
do it.
Yeah, he would never do it. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think you would probably give your endorsement to something if it wasn't for your taste. So,
This hit the spot.
Yeah.
And so that's what put you back on my radar and introduced me, you know, via snail mail to your husband, Rob. So when you walked up to say hello at Malton Fest about a month ago, it was like, whoa, hello.
Yes.
I remember you guys.
Mishpacha, how you doing?
I know, right?
That's it.
So we were so happy.
And here we all are.
Yeah, I'm so happy to
be here. So when you started working as a working actress, you continued your career after Supergirl and Billie Jean.
But Billie Jean, what was that like for you?
Well,
I was about to skip over your favorite
movie. And I'm going to hit you across this table.
I'm sorry, darling.
And also, interestingly, with the whole hashtag Me Too.
I just said this to him.
Isn't that wild?
I just said this to him. You know, everything old is new again.
Yes.
This movie is the epitome of that.
I mean, I don't think it was the first, but just so interesting in the 80s that here there was a theme. And the guys that wrote it were Walter Bernstein wrote, I believe, the first version of The Legend of Billie Jean. And he was a blacklisted writer during the McCarthy period. Mm-hmm. And that is why I believe the movie has a lot of resonance because he was telling kind of a political story, even though it's dressed up in a blonde trailer park, you know, girl, you know, kids that are on the wrong side of the tracks and kind of in this hashtag Me Too movement back then, that it was sort of a modern St. Joan story. And I do think other writers came in once John Peters came on board, and it did get probably more watered down or shifted around a bit, but I think the nugget of it is there, and that
is
why it probably was super appealing.
It is what it is, and you, the image of you that sort of, just like your Supergirl, it is quite funny.
It was those first two roles were like,
and then there's you as Billie Jean, just looking like a badass.
Yeah,
you know, looking a little bit like Bowie.
Right.
Just
and
staring.
That Pat Benatar song, "Invincible," which I know a lot of people were big fans of. And Christian Slater was in that. And Christian, who obviously went on to have a gigantic
career. He's
done career,
He's
done really well. And people, I know he gets this because I get it all the time. We play brother and sister in the movie.
Yes.
And people are always asking.
Just go with it.
I know.
Just go with it.
It would be simpler to say that.
At a certain point, say, yep.
Yes,
yep,
we are.
Correct.
But, I mean, what are the chances of that you someone with your last name is playing your brother and sister? But,
at a time when people don't necessarily know either of you.
Yeah.
So,
I know.
So if it was today, don't think somebody
His
might look it up.
His mother is actually a well-known casting director, Mary Jo Slater, and she had, I think she may have cast me in something before this, but since then I think I had and knew her and certainly had met her before I had done Supergirl or Legend of Billie Jean because she was in the New York, just in the New York scene.
So interesting.
Yeah.
So that means you uprooted and moved here to L.A.?
After I did Ruthless People, I'm trying to remember the order, I moved to Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. I was in New York. I had started this theater company with Fisher Stevens and Nancy Travis called Naked Angels and Nicole Burdett, and it went on to do really wonderful things. And it was February in New York City, and I was on 75th. I was living on the Upper West Side between Columbus and Amsterdam, and I had to just go to the subway to go down for a rehearsal or something, and I was so cold. I mean, I'm embarrassed. This is just an embarrassing story.
No, it isn't.
I remember getting home and just thinking, I'm done. If I can work in California, same, Los Angeles, I don't want to be cold like this. Yeah.
The very shortened version for them was they were supposed to fly back. My dad commuted for 2 years from New York to LA for Entertainment Tonight.
Are you from New York originally?
Yeah. Both my parents. My mom's Bronx.
Oh, really? My parents are from the Bronx.
It sounds like it, yes.
Oh, my
gosh. Sounds like your mom and my mom. We have our
Alices.
Probably,
yes.
and then my dad's born in Manhattan but raised in Teaneck, New Jersey. But,
oh my gosh,
but
sure.
They both, my dad was commuting. This trip, my mom had come out with him. They were supposed to fly home, but there was a blizzard, and they weren't sure if they were going to get. It was one of those where you might end up in Chicago, you might end up in Syracuse.
Yeah. In those days, the airlines let you change reservations without a big hassle. So there was this incoming blizzard, which they were certain was going to shut down all the airports.
Yeah.
So we played hooky for a weekend.
Yeah.
In February.
Yeah.
In February.
Yeah.
And stayed here, and we had an outdoor brunch.
You know Patty's?
Sure, yeah, of course, in Toluca Lake.
So my mom always says, we were sitting outside at Patty's, and I said, I'm done now.
Yeah.
I'm done with the cold.
I mean, for some of us, it's not everybody, but for some of us, it really was like that. Like,
oh, yeah, and now they're both wusses. Now they can't handle any kind of weather. They've been
Although
here too long.
Although the material to stay warm is much better in 2019. I think the down coats I don't know that they had the high
tech. When we were raising Jesse, we said, there's a phrase you're never going to hear growing up here in Southern California. Bundle up.
Or layers. Yeah. Layers was another one. It's like, oh, so a shirt and then a sweater.
Yeah.
Layers.
Right.
Layers.
Well, anyway, so you did make the move.
I did make the move. And then I met Rob. So Helen Hunt and I went to... The reason I knew to come out here was not only from doing the movie Ruthless People, but because there was a group of actors that actually was my mom had helped organize. It was a filmmakers exchange between Russia and New York, and me, Judd Nelson, Mary Stuart Masterson, Helen Hunt, Craig Sheffer, Tim Ransom, Erica Gimple, and Keisha Lewis, who are my friends from Performing Arts, we went to Moscow in a filmmakers exchange. This is when wall was still up, so 1987.
Wow.
And they had artists come over here. It was this exchange, and we went to the National Theater, the Moscow National Theater, and toured, and that's where Helen and I met and had this incredible, just so much fun talking for, 16 hours a day. And when she was living in L.A., and I came back, she said, I want you to come to Gary Austin's improv class. Oh, because she had done improv in Moscow. She got up and improvised, and my mouth dropped open. I was like, how the heck do you do that? And she was completely fearless. And when I came to L.A., she said, go to Gary Austin's improv class. He founded the Groundlings. And she was on a movie. She had gotten a part somewhere, so she wasn't there. And I walked in. And I called her that night and I said, I met the man I'm going to marry, Rob. And she said, Rob Watsky. And I was like, how did you know? And she's like, I just knew. And that's where I met Rob. So it's because of Helen Hunt via Gary Austin that I met Rob.
Via Moscow,
my mother.
Yes.
All comes back to
circles
mom.
Within circles.
Exactly, yes. Always. Yeah. But anyway, but yes, so that's how I ended up in Los Angeles, long story short.
Well,
longer.
You start making these high-profile movies with very high-profile stars and co-stars. And I'm wondering, Ruthless People and The Secret of My Success and Sticky Fingers. And,
and City Slickers with Billy Crystal.
I'm not asking favorites or anything like indiscreet. Who impressed you? Who were you on a stage with working in a scene
I have two stories that stand out in my mind, and one was with Peter O'Toole on Supergirl. Mm-hmm. So I was 18 and green as could be, and there was one day where there was nothing much. They were setting up the shot or the something, and he said, "Do some Shakespeare for me," because he knew I'd gone to performing arts, and I did Start of the Juliet speech. Thou knowest the mask of night is on my face, else would a maiden's blush but paint my cheek for that which thou hast overheard me speak tonight. And my arms are flailing, and I'm very earnest, and I'm just acting my heart out. And he says, I want you to try it again, and this time I want you to imagine that you're holding a daffodil between your thumb and your pointer, and just keep your hands down by your side and do the monologue again. And this time I did it. I still get so touched thinking of this. And I could just feel, even at that age, the poetry coming through.
Wow.
Without the flailing. And the language was the thing. And that was really one of those profound just acting tip moments. And the other one was with Bette Midler on Ruthless People. And it was a scene where it's a very high comedy scene. And I had learned very early on, it's good to get an acting coach for a film because you're not having any real rehearsal, nothing's in time. And the acting coach can actually just help you have things on the day because you're shooting out of order that can bring the scene to life. And mm-hmm. I worked with Barry Primus. He was a wonderful acting coach from the Actor's Studio. But we got to the day of the scene where I'm having to tell Bette Midler that her husband, Danny DeVito, is not willing to pay the ransom. And, you know, she's basically, I have to break this terrible news because we're holding her hostage. And you know, the emotion just wasn't there. I had my sensory and I had my notes from Barry and I had the nerves or the something. And I'm sure you've talked to many, many actors, and you probably have as well, that, you know, a lot of the technique is what do you do in that moment mm-hmm. if you can't, you know, how can you stay relaxed or how are you going to? Well, in this moment, and I was just struggling, and Bette turned to me and she said, I just let's do one take where you imagine that you're telling me, pretend that you're having to tell me that I have cancer. Now, it sounds very heavy and very dark, but my 22-year-old little self, it just relaxed the system, and I could be in the imaginary world with her, and the feeling was all there. And so those are two very strong moments with fancy people. I've had many others without so many, but those are two that stand out in my mind.
Well, those are two gems.
And yeah. Kindness always sticks with people. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing.
And
another
actor wanting to help you. And
yeah.
One thing I do notice, because I've now been, like, the last 8-9 years I've been on 3 television series mm-hmm. as a series regular playing the mom. That's mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that's true in Austin and here in LA and Vancouver. And the pace is so fast. I mean, it really is like NASCAR.
Yeah.
Like drive by just so quickly. And so anything you can bring a lot now at this age, like playing the moms, I feel like, can you just bring a sense of warmth and mm-hmm. like good humor and to help the kids relax or that? And, you know, it really does go such a long way. Even if I can't say enough about the feeling like I'm on the other side of, I hope I can get it right, or I really want on the other side of just, how can I make this good for everybody else, or, you know.
Oh, see, but then you're not only helping the younger actors on your set,
yeah,
but you're kind of being an exemplar for them. You're, you know, you're saying, this is how it goes.
Yeah, I hope so.
And then hopefully they take that with them. You know how this works.
Yeah, of course.
It moves.
We have these people we remember, right? That kind of like, you just, even if it's just briefly, you're like, oh, I remember. Like they were actually.
It doesn't matter what job you do. Everyone has the day someone was nice to them.
Yeah.
I repeat it constantly, but everyone in Entertainment Tonight treated me like gold.
Oh,
and because
that makes
of that,
a big difference.
Because of growing up there and growing up with them, I've never had patience for rude people.
Yeah.
Because though I was a kid, I could give them nothing.
Yeah.
They got nothing from me in that sense.
But
it wasn't
they were
like,
kind.
They were so sweet.
Yeah.
So sweet.
Goes
and
a long way.
It means a lot. And mm-hmm. it does. It sticks with you. And that means that there are young actors who one day, when they're a little older, will get to say the same thing.
Yeah. Maybe. We'll
you know?
See.
No, it's a cycle. Yeah. You know that. It's
yeah.
a cycle.
Yeah.
And that's it. It's also why someone wants to hire you.
Yeah.
You know,
although that is
piece.
An interesting thing about the work really being, it does. I always heard it and I was like, well, I just think I'm always going to be working, you know, like, I don't know. Even though when I had Hannah, I really just loved stopping. I was working maybe once a year, much less, but I did really love being a mom and raising her. I just always had that sense the work is here, it'll always come, and it mm-hmm. does, but it really is true. You get older and it really does start to it's just lessons. You have to find other means to keep yourself going.
Yes, of course. I want to ask you about something. I hope this isn't
anything
negative in any way.
Mm-mm.
But you were a co-star on a big network TV series.
Right.
Co-created by David Milch.
Yes. Capital News.
Deadwood just aired, as we're speaking, last week.
Yes, 2.0 or something.
Right. And Lloyd Bridges was a star.
Yes.
And this had all the promise.
No one ever asks about that.
well, this had all the promise of being like a solid,
yes,
big show. Something like Aaron Sorkin's Newsroom.
Exactly.
A generation later.
Yes.
And it didn't work.
I know. We did one season and it just kind of, I mean, he's brilliant, David Milch. There's mm-hmm. no question. And I saw how he worked with actors. People would come in and if they had a problem, he'd be like, come on, bring them over to the computer and have mm-hmm. them. If somebody had trouble, I remember him going like, well, what do you think he should say? Or, he was just, which always is the best. Although I don't think Aaron Sorkin's like that. and he's the genius of all geniuses.
Yeah.
But I don't know why that didn't go. I haven't seen it since then, so I'd be curious.
Nor
to
has
look
anyone
back.
Else.
Yeah. I know. I think it aired. I think it did air. It did go on the
13
air.
13 episodes.
So
is what
it did
I read.
Go. Yeah. Yeah.
Because I always wonder about that, because when you're starting a series, you don't know.
No.
If it's going to be 5 years out of your life.
Exactly.
Or 13 weeks out of your life.
Exactly.
And you have to obviously be optimistic and positive. And, getting ready to settle in.
Yeah, here's a long haul.
Getting to know your fellow actors and the crew and your directors and the producers. And sometimes the rug gets pulled out. And that's got to be a very funny feeling.
Well, I don't think it's just actors. I think it's anyone that's in the creative business
mm-hmm.
and generating their own work or being dependent on other people mm-hmm. to give them work. It's very unpredictable. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Certainly not. Yeah.
Now, you did get to do, as you mentioned earlier, briefly, some voice work for
mm-hmm.
DC.
Yes, I play Martha Kent in the DC, it's called the... Oh, gosh, don't retape this. Let me just fall on my face. It's
Batman,
like
Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, Batman the Animated Series. Yes, I play Talia, the
right.
Russian
mm-hmm.
villain. And mm-hmm. I have a lot of people at Comic-Con come up with their Talia animated thing sell, and I sign
and
that.
I DC it. Superhero Girls.
That's it. DC Superhero Girls. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Say that 5 times fast.
DC Superhero Girls. And I play Martha Kent. I am stripped of my superpower. Although
you're a mom.
I'm the mom.
Superhero.
And also I'm
Moms
the mom.
Superheroes.
That's true. That's true. Remember that.
So what do you find sustains you?
That's such a good question.
The Selkie and the Fisherman.
The Selkie. That's the yes. Well, what is sustaining? It is, I think, my good marriage. Is that just so embarrassing?
Why would that? That's the
oh,
best.
No.
I will
possible.
Tell the truth. I'm doing such a shout out to Rob Watsky right now. When Hannah went to college, I don't know if it was the first or second year. I don't even know if I've told him this. He knows this, though. He's, started this nonprofit, Turbine Arts, and does these wonderful improv shows and brings in local LA artists on Sunday nights and kind of just does this as his love and creative hobby on
Is
Sunday
there a
nights.
Website people can
Yes,
for this?
Turbine Arts Collective. I think that's
sure.
it.
Sure.
Turbine Arts Collective. Oh, my
people
gosh.
You can find that. They can
you
Google
can find
that.
Yeah,
Arts
you can.
Collective.
Yes.
Rob
and,
Watsky.
Anyway, it was like the first or second year, and there was this emptiness thing that hit, or I don't even know how to describe it. I just was
My mother joined
so,
random clubs. It's fine.
And all I knew is starting at around 3 o'clock in the afternoon, probably the time when I used to pick her up mm-hmm. at school or something, I just would kind of settle on the couch, and, it's just this, just kind of a little bit blue and dreary, and I just had this impression and feeling of Rob, and not impression, he'd be like, come on, old girl, and Sunday nights he would make me perform. We would do improv shows and things like that, and it was just such a gift to kind of, whether he meant to or not, like, get me out, and there's life is still going on. So that was fun. That's fun, and that continues to go on.
And do you enjoy improv?
I do. He's masterful at it. I'm not just saying it because he's my husband. There mm-hmm. are people that are just, and he's teaching it now, he teaches introduction and then two classes during the week for this particular technique, which is not based on comedy. It's based on you only take from what you're getting from the other person. So you're never having to think up something funny mm-hmm. or come up with a funny line. And he's really interested in that way of working. But in terms of what is sustaining or what my friendships, I think, really help a lot. I've been a composer. I have made 5 records. I've just finished a 6th album. That's been helpful. I'm
composer and singer.
Yeah. Well, that's because it's like too much work to find other people to sing. I'm like, ah. I know I have done musical theater workshops. And in fact, Cal State Long Beach did a production. My last album before this was based on The Ugly Duckling, Hans Christian Andersen's Ugly Duckling. And Cal State Long Beach, this woman, as part of her thesis in her grad school, she directed a play of it. Aww. And it was beautiful. These kids were incredible. These college kids performed it as a theater piece, which was very in keeping at my performing arts days, bus and truck, writing these theater mm-hmm. shows. So, yeah. Yeah.
But talk Malt about
Fest,
albums.
That's Malt sustaining.
Malt and Fest. No.
So The Selkie and the Fisherman is, I'm calling it Selkie now, but it is the story, it's the myth of the Selkie and the Fisherman, which is a very well-known myth in the Scotland, Ireland, Celtic traditions, but you can also find it in South America and in Iceland and in all the cultures have this story. And I first read it in this book by Clarissa Pinkola Estes. She wrote this wonderful book called Women Who Run with the Wolves. She's a Jungian psychologist, but she took these archetypal stories, the Selkie being one of them, Ugly Duckling was one of them, the Match Girl, Bluebeard, and she uses these stories from her Jungian point of view to say all women, these are rites of passage that all women will go through. And so I was reading it with Helen Hunt. We had a little women's reading meditation group, and we read through the book, and I was so lit up by that story. And in fact, Helen had first told me about the story before we even read it in the book. So she had heard it beginning. And the themes of The Selkie and the Fisherman are about the ability to trust your intuition and it's the fisherman steals the pelt of a Selkie and she has to live on land and for 7 years with the fisherman, but they actually do fall in love and they have a child. And after 7 years, her skin starts to get very chapped and dry and she has to return to the ocean. And anyway, it goes on from there. And it took 2-3 years for me to write it, mostly because I couldn't get past the abduction, the stealing of the pelt. That was just, especially in light of the hashtag mm-hmm. #MeToo, and it just felt too. But once I made the adjustment and reread Clarissa Pinkola Estes' story, that it is actually a love, that mm-hmm. falling in love can be an abduction. It doesn't have to be a literal abduction. That kind of pushed me through, and I'm super, super excited about it. We just finished mastering, and it'll be available on iTunes probably in July, August.
So you wrote the music?
I wrote everything. Yeah, all my albums are my. This is my hobby. I feel like. What is that? Oh, I think it's Meg Ryan with Tom Hanks where she goes, my soul, and You've Got Mail when she's describing life, you know. But it is sort of my soul work,
wonderful.
My albums. Thank you.
Knowing that that's all you, especially we were listening to it together, it's beautiful.
Thank you very much.
It's really beautiful. Yeah. And my dad remembered that you had performed at Genghis Cohen.
Oh, yeah, I used to do that. But then it started to feel like you're just having your friends come see you. And I was like, oh, I don't want to make them come out and get Chinese food to hear.
it's their favorite Chinese. They'll go whenever you want.
I haven't been in such a while there. Is it still good?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you get there? What's like your number one dish?
Oh, well, the no-name duck.
Yes.
The no-name duck?
He's a no-name duck, man. I've never eaten it. I don't think my mother's
ever
eaten it.
Do you not eat meat? Or is it just because, why is it a no-name duck?
Because it's not a Peking duck. It's like a Peking duck that doesn't require 24 hours notice.
Do you roll it in mushu or no?
No, no, no. It has these little.
They have dumpling.
Dumplings. Oh, I'm going to have to go back.
Oh, and they have New York New York egg roll, one of the very few places in L.A.
Do you see the joy that is just swept forth out of this man?
New York egg rolls.
I like hearing that.
We didn't call them that when we lived in New York. They were just egg rolls.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my other guess.
They come out here and they give you spring rolls and expect you to accept that.
No, that's unacceptable.
You know, wordlessly. No.
This is the most passionate I've seen you in
An egg roll, you can feel your arteries hardening as you eat it. It's so unhealthy. It's so completely unhealthy and wonderful.
But it is what the Jewish people eat on Christmas.
Yes.
Damn straight it is. Every year.
Right. That's right.
I think, was it Sotomayor? Wait, Kagan. Justice Kagan said that when one of her confirmation hearings that she had Chinese food on Christmas everybody else or something like that.
There's a reason A Christmas Story is real life.
Oh, gosh. Helen, it's been such a pleasure having you here
as our guest. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm so excited.
I have to say, you give off such a positive, radiant energy.
Oh, thank you.
I'm not a spiritual person in that way.
Right.
But
he did sage the room before you came in. But other than that.
No, but you do. You emanate a calm and a sense of well-being.
Thank you very much. Well, it's been such a joy to be here. And Jessie, my goodness, her skin. Have you ever seen anybody? For you listeners, she has the most radiant skin. It's like I'm looking at a painting.
I have lupus and a bunch of other autoimmune diseases. So I'm really good with makeup.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Well, I'm sorry about the lupus.
That's okay. That's why I'm good at makeup. It all has to, you know.
Well, your makeup is beautiful.
Thank you. Thank
but
you
I don't
much.
Think it's
thank
makeup you. People out there that are listening.
Oh, please.
It's an inner light, too, that's coming through.
Well, that's a family thing. That's definitely a family thing.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate
it. It's our pleasure. Do you social media-ize?
I mean,
it's all right.
I have an Instagram account. It's Helen R. Slater, and I do put things on there.
Well, that's what people
The way
know.
I even got like 10 is because Helen Hunt was like tagging me in things. And then people, I think, felt sorry for me. They're like, all right, we'll just start to.
Oh, please.
No, but it's Helen R. Slater, and I don't really post that much.
Helen R. Slater.
Yeah, I think because someone had Helen Slater.
It happens. Well, it happens, yes.
And that.
And there we are. And before you tell us all where people can find you and me, we should be telling people that we have merch. We haven't been really crowing about that.
Oh.
Yeah. We are very much the neurotic Jew in us as we go, we have merch, but don't worry about it. It's fine. Nobody, we don't want to bother anyone with it.
Similar to merch.
You performing at the, same deal. No, we do on T Public, Malton on Movies, and we have everything. The mugs, you want a wall hanging.
Yes.
They make one of everything. But my mom, our best buyer is my mother, who wears the shirt that has both of our faces on it. And that strangers, when they walk up and say, who's that? She goes, well, this is my husband, and this is my daughter, and they have a show. And
I don't mean to top you, but my mom, when she has people over for dinner, she's like, I'm just going to play you my daughter's music. Just sit right there. One second. It's so beautiful. Sit.
I love it.
And she plays Rob's movie. Come back. Oh. And her TV is in her bedroom. She doesn't have one in the main room. Come back to my bedroom. I'm going to show you Rob's movie. It's so wonderful. He's such a genius.
God bless.
If family's not there for that, why even?
That's
I love that
shining quality.
No, Alice is our best
Alice's.
Model. I'm telling you, our Alice's. No, my Alice. I make her model the different tops, and she's pretty darn
fabulous. I want to get the merch.
It is it's T Public Malton on Movies.
Is that T-E-E?
It's T Public. Yes. And you can get all kinds of fun stuff. But more importantly, to follow Leonard Maltin, and also me, but mostly Leonard Maltin, on Twitter and Instagram. It's at Leonard Maltin and at Jessie Maltin. And then you can go to leonardmaltin.com, where there's a link for the merch, also for the podcast, but where we post book roundups and movie reviews and all kinds of good stuff. And you just posted a book roundup, got so much good stuff in there. There's a book on Audrey Hepburn. There's Nick DeSemlin's book about Wild and Crazy Guys, the Animal House folks, SNL, all those comedy geniuses. There were so many different ones. John Singleton wrote the foreword to
Donald Bogle's new book, Black Hollywood.
Black Hollywood, yeah.
Oh,
a lot
wow.
of good stuff.
Lots
there.
Of really wonderful
that
books out
great.
Right now.
Anyway, that's all there to read at leonardmaltin.com, and we will be back talking into microphones so you can hear it next week. Thank you so much for listening. Malton on Movies is sponsored today by Legion M, the first fan-owned entertainment company. They've got a lot of good stuff going on, and you can learn about it at legionm.com.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals, and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/prenatal.